Well, when we have to go to elections in Australia, we often complain, oh, here we go again, we have to go and vote for that lot. We obviously sometimes take the opportunity to vote for granted. There are much bigger democracies than us in terms of numbers of people, but newer. And Indonesia, our good friend to the north, is one of those, and they've recently had elections. Joining me now to talk about those elections is Dave McRae. Dave, welcome back to the program.
Very happy to be here again.
Well, now, what is going on up there?
Well, basically, on Tuesday, the Electoral Commission here announced Joko Widodo, the Jakarta governor, a man of the people candidate, as the next president of Indonesia, the president-elect. But his rival, Prabowo Subianto, a former general from the authoritarian era, has indicated he doesn't accept the result. Even before the Electoral Commission announced it, he went on television, said he was rejecting the election, withdrawing from the process, although he seems to have backtracked from that now. So basically what you have is a president-elect, and now his rival, Prabowo Subianto, is likely to challenge that result through Indonesia's constitutional court. He'll need to lodge that challenge within 3 days of the announcement on Tuesday, a couple of days ago, and then the court will have until the 21st of August to decide the challenge. But really, there isn't any sign from what the Prabowo camp have been saying that the sort of widespread fraud they've alleged has actually happened. Joko Widodo won by a 6.3% margin with the huge size of the Indonesian electorate, just over 8 million votes. So you really would need really widespread fraud of the sort that we haven't seen evidence of for that result to be overturned. So I think we should really see Prabowo Subianto's announcement of withdrawal that he then backtracked from as just the latest of a number of stunts that he's engaged in to undermine the democratic process after losing the election.
Mm. So you think, is there a real possibility that just as he claimed he was withdrawing and then didn't, which would of course disenfranchise all the people who voted for him, that he's now saying he's going to lodge this claim against the election, that he may not even proceed with that?
Different members of his camp have been saying different things. My expectation is that he would lodge a challenge with the Constitutional Court. That's what Indonesia's election process provides for. That would be a perfectly normal thing for a losing candidate to do if they felt that the election had not been fair. So we'll just have to wait until the time limit to see what he does. And I think it's important for listeners to understand, Prabowo's approach to this election has been really extraordinary. On election day, Indonesia has quick counts to know the result quickly because at the just under 500,000 polling stations that Indonesia has, the count finishes within hours of the polling stations closing. So you have these quick counts which take a statistically representative sample of polling so that you can know the result on the day. They've accurately predicted Indonesia's previous two direct presidential elections because after that, the Electoral Commission takes around 2 weeks to go through a process of tallying the vote from those hundreds of thousands of polling stations. But the credible quick counts from institutes that we know have a good track record all showed Jokowi winning, and many of them by a similar margin to what the Electoral Commission has finally come out with. But Prabowo's camp announced their own quick counts run by organisations with dubious track records, which showed him winning. They announced those results on television stations owned by his backers, and the TV stations in Indonesia have really become very partisan over the election, and they went ahead and claimed victory as well. So basically, you had both sides declaring victory, Joko Widodo based on credible quick counts and now on the Electoral Commission result, which has been heavily scrutinised, and Prabowo on these dubious quick counts and now making these claims of withdrawing from the election. So it really has been an extraordinary response to his defeat.
Yes, it does seem unusual. I mean, it's understandable people who lose are unhappy, and it's perfectly not only fair but appropriate, I would think, the responsible thing to do if you genuinely believe there's been some rorting to have that investigated. But this action fits in a much broader pattern that's very, very unattractive. Now, can we go back to the earlier days of the new president? How long it took him to get Megawati's approval? It did seem to me she was being a bit of a teaser. Apparently, under the system there, he needed her approval to be nominated as the candidate. And, you know, she'd go off to memorials and take him that would be great publicity for her and him, but still not say, yes, I endorse him. So what was going on within that party that made them take so long, really, to endorse him?
Well, Jokowi's image is really as a new style of politician. He entered politics during the democratic era, becoming a mayor of a small town in central Java in 2005 and then Jakarta governor in 2012. And he really became the candidate for Megawati's party, PDIP, for Jakarta governor because of how popular he was in Solo, that small town. He was re-elected for a second term with 90% of the vote, which is an extraordinary result in any democratic election.
Yeah.
Largely on the basis of populist education and health programs extending coverage to the poorer parts of that city's society. So he's promised consistently a new style of politics, really campaigning on a man of the people image, where Indonesians would consider many of their leaders to be aloof. That's made him immensely popular, but it also makes him a threat to some of the entrenched elites within political parties.
Yeah.
And what makes Jokowi really interesting is, for the first time, we have a president who isn't the head or controls his political party. Yudhoyono essentially formed the Democrat Party for his tilt at the presidency. Jokowi's rival, Prabowo Subianto, formed his own political vehicle, the Greater Indonesia Party, for his tilt at the presidency. But Jokowi had to seek the nomination of PDIP to become presidential candidate. I think the time that Megawati took to establish him as the party's presidential candidate reflected a few things. First, I think she's very keen to still be seen to be in control of the party. And in fact, that's one of the issues that damaged Jokowi throughout his campaign, was this issue that Prabowo's camp spread that he was a puppet of Megawati. Although I think as president, it's unlikely he'll be beholden to his party. I mean, he's directly elected by the people. The second thing is, again, there was this discord within the party. Some senior members would have much preferred Megawati to run for president.
A fourth time and lose again?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, she just wouldn't have won. And I think that would have meant either Prabowo would have become president or a new style candidate would have emerged from a different party to become his rival, because what you've really seen during this election, it's been so polarizing. It split the electorate right down the middle between those wanting Jokowi's style of democracy, where he pledges to listen to people and implement their will, and Prabowo's, where he talks really much more about governing over people, mixing general pledges to democracy with some really anti-democratic rhetoric. So anyway, Megawati, I guess, had to make sure that she was comfortable not running herself, that she could square off those opponents within her party. And then the third thing, I guess there was a concern within some in the party that once you made Jokowi the official presidential candidate, that he would immediately become subject to intense attacks that he wasn't receiving when he was only a very popular
A tactical ploy.
Yeah. And
let him,
I mean,
let him build his popularity.
Yeah, and the reality of the matter is, really, the Jokowi camp in particular has been subject to a relentless smear campaign during this election. Prabowo's camp have used American political consultants, and although they've denied involvement in anything other than positive television advertising, the reality is that some of the smear campaigning is really a very direct copy of some of the stuff that has been directed at Obama. You've seen questions of, is Jokowi a Christian rather than a Muslim? Was he even born in Indonesia or was it in Singapore? And so that may have also been one of the considerations in waiting so long to establish Jokowi as the official candidate.
What do we know about him and how he will conduct himself in terms of foreign relations and particularly in relation to Australia?
Well, because Jokowi has never held a national-level position, there's a lot we don't know about his foreign policy. The bit we can glean from his written campaign statement, which would have, I think, largely been drafted by experts, and his performance in the presidential debate doesn't suggest a dramatic departure from Indonesia's current foreign policy. I think it's quite likely we'd see him delegate a lot of foreign policy, at least in his first term, to a professional diplomat, as Indonesia's previous two foreign ministers have been for many, many years now. And I think Joko Widodo will really be a president that Australia should be able to work with. He has perhaps been more overtly nationalist in the campaign, in what's been quite a nationalist campaign, than President Yudhoyono. And he spoke during the debate both of the need for engagement with Australia, but also the feeling that Australia had treated Indonesia as a weaker country. And I think we should really take notice of that second statement and think carefully about some of the things we've been pushing ahead with, the way we responded to the espionage row, turning back boats to Indonesia despite the fact that they clearly detest that policy, and be ready for a perhaps slightly different response to those policies under a Joko Widodo presidency. Mm. But really there is the uncertainty there.
Certainly when you watch any TV coverage of him or read the press coverage, he looks and comes across as a really nice guy. And I'm just wondering when you think they'll make the movie. I mean, this is a bloke who was born in a slum, dragged himself up out of there, runs a furniture factory, or did, I don't know if he still does, becomes the mayor and moves on in local politics and runs on a campaign of anti-corruption and cleaner administration because it just gets in everyone's way. So he's a man of the people, and then gets scooped up, really, into the national campaign, runs the same campaign and wins. And now he's the new president, albeit there's a challenge, but you know, legal experts are saying at the moment that won't go anywhere. So when are they going to make the movie? I mean, it's a fairy tale story, isn't it?
Well, someone's already beaten you to it, actually, Amanda.
Oh,
and,
no.
Without Jokowi's involvement, someone made a biopic of Jokowi over the last year. I have it sitting on my computer downloaded from YouTube, but I'd have to admit I haven't watched it yet. It didn't receive good reviews. But, yeah, certainly, I mean, this election has been a really compelling story between this candidate who emerged during the Democratic era, promising a style of government where he listens to people, and it's hard to really get across how important his man of the people image has been to his popularity, with, on the other hand, a authoritarian era figure for whom representative democracy was not a key part of his agenda, mixing his campaign with promises for strong leadership, a strong Indonesia, anti-democratic and anti-foreign rhetoric throughout. I mean, it really has been a compelling story, and the way it's captured the attention of Indonesians and had such strong participation in the election from them, I think has just been an amazing process to watch.
Indeed it has. Dave McRae, thanks for joining us, and we will talk again.
Thanks.
Dave McRae is a senior research fellow at the Asia Institute at the University of Melbourne and an associate at the Centre for Indonesian Law, Islam and Society. You're on RN. You're listening to Counterpoint with me, Amanda Vanstone.